Yeah, especially it strengthens understanding dependent arising and interrelatedness, strengthens the understanding of emptiness, the wisdom realizing emptiness, which is the third principle of the path. Because they say, because things are dependent, therefore they're empty. And because they're empty, therefore they're dependent. In other words, you know, dependent arising and emptiness aren't two little distinct boxes. Yeah, but they're two things. You look at one thing from this side and you say, ah, dependent arising. You look at from this side, you say, ah, emptiness. But it's the exact same thing. Yeah, and so that's the thing. Because when you start really looking and understanding all these incredible, intricate causes and conditions and all these different parts and all these different elements and so many things fitting together, almost miraculously, magically, at one particular moment to make one particular thing, then you really see how things don't have any independent, inherent, solid existence. Because they're just completely this momentary collection of all these parts due to all these causes and conditions coming together at that particular moment the way they did. And then, of course, it all changes and becomes something else. You know, so there's nothing solid. And you can really begin to see how those two things just go right together. Yeah?
When you say, well, if the thief has a peach and you enjoy it, that's your karma. Mm-hmm. But it's also your karma that you have a plant that has no peaches.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, in some way, your karma, the tree is not having peaches, not because it's your karma, but in order for that to happen, you have to be paired up with a peach with no trees.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore,
yeah, yeah.
So therefore, those two have to be.
They're part. Interrelated.
So then you can't say that karma is not, it's a whole different set of rules that doesn't apply to
right.
Cause and effect rules.
Well, you can say that conceptually we can talk about karma, and conceptually we can talk about biology and physics, cause and effect. But in actual fact, in the life, they're influencing each other all the time. Okay? You see, that's what I was talking about, is you have the spaghetti plate, and they're all mixed up together. When we start talking about one or the other, we're pulling one noodle out and looking at it. Okay? Or like maybe we're looking at the spaghetti from, you know, this side as opposed to this side. Yeah, or some other way, okay? Yeah, I mean, imagine being inside a spaghetti noodle looking at the plate. Yeah, I mean, it's going to look very different, isn't it? Yeah, and how you describe what the plate of spaghetti looks like if you're inside one of the noodles looking out, it's going to sound totally different than if you're outside looking in. And yet, it's similar, you know, there's a whole bunch of things going on there. Okay? But, I mean, this is one of the hard, what I find myself, I fight with so much. It's like, because in Buddhism, everything's broken down into, you know, these nice, neat little categories, 3 of this, 4 of that, 5 of that, you know? And then, you know, they say, okay, there's 3 of this. Now, the first, you know, there's one major thing, and it has 3 branches. Now, the first one has 3 subcategories. The second one has 17 subcategories. The first one of those 7 subcategories covers the first 2 of these subcategories. And the second of those 17 covers half of the third one's 6th subcategory, you know? And it's like, and as one lama said, symmetry is stupid. Yeah, that what we're doing, like somehow I got, you know, I think, I don't know if it's our mind or our educational system, but when we study things, we like to think that they are nice, distinct, independent, isolatable things that we can examine and know absolutely everything about without studying everything else, you know? And that's what the physicists are coming to. I mean, you can't look at an electron and know where it is and still know how fast it's going. I mean, it's like this electron is being measured in relationship to everything else around it.
Including the observer.
Including the observer. Exactly. Exactly. So we like to think that once we have a list of categories, that everything is, you know, here's this, here's this, here's this, and that they're in nice, independent, isolatable things. But the world isn't like that, because everything's affecting everything else all the time. Yeah? And when you really think about it, it's totally mind-boggling. Yeah? And then you begin to realize your categories are conceptual conveniences to help you understand things. They're not rigid things. In other words, categories are descriptions. I used to think categories are this, and then the world fits into the categories. Like first you have the category, and then you fit the world into it. Yeah? But it's not like that. You have all of universal experience and existence, and categories are only ways of describing it. Yeah? That we made up. We made up the categories. They don't exist by themselves. We make them up. Yeah?
Conversely, you have some points when reading the text.
Right. And I think they're doing that simply to get across to us the point that there is a cause that brings a result. We think that we hear, if we think, okay, you kill somebody, you're born in a lower realm, and that's all there is to it, because that's all that was explained in the text, that's like a biology professor saying, you plant the seed, and you get and the peach tree comes, or the peach comes from it. I mean, that's really simplistic, isn't it? Because that peach seed growing into the peach tree, it depends on the weather patterns, it depends on the pollution, it depends on the ground level, it depends on so many other different things. But so just in the text, them saying, if you do this, this happens, it isn't a categorical thing that there's only one cause and one effect with no other intervening conditions. It just means that, you know, if you have this happen, there's a lot of potential there to bring this kind of result. Yeah? But exactly what happens, it depends on so many other things. Yeah? So many other things.
So are you saying that a ripening karma has to involve a consciousness that experiences pleasure and pain?
In general, yeah. Yeah, I mean, karma is, it doesn't mean, how to say, the ripening of karma is intricately involved with sentient beings' experience of pleasure and pain.
So
okay.
It seems to be an unfolding at that time.
Right. It doesn't mean that the rock isn't going to hit you, okay? But it means that maybe the rock hits you, but by your changing your attitude, you are completely okay about it. Yeah? I mean, it's like what Patty Jo was just saying, that, you know, the same thing happens to her at different times in her life, and she reacts very differently. Yeah? So it's the same thing. If you change your attitude, then you're changing how you're experiencing that happening. And see, this is the reason why we do the thought training practice. Yeah? Because, we may have karma kind of pushing us to find ourselves in certain external situations that would generally lead us to experience either pleasure or pain. And if we take the situations where we'd normally experience pain, then if in those situations we transform it by transforming our way of thinking, yeah, then we act in a way to purify that karma. And we also prevent ourselves from creating more negative karma because of getting angry or disturbed about what's happening to us. Mm-hmm. And that's why we say everything that happens to us is an opportunity. It's all a possibility to practice the Dharma. Uh-huh.
thinking about the five aggregates and logic of the definite form.
Right. I mean, when we're talking about the throwing karma, it actually produces all five aggregates.
Okay?
So because
that's just
right. Because a throwing karma, when we talk about a rebirth, we're not just talking about the form aggregate, we're talking about the mental aggregates, the mental components. Okay? We're talking about the body and mind, and which level of body and mind we take is influenced by our karma. Okay? So that would be as a result of the throwing karma. But then, the reason why I say that, although your body and mind itself is not pleasure or painful, okay, the fact that through your body and mind you experience pleasure and pain show that it's related to karma. Okay?
What do you mean by the form aggregate?
Oh, okay. Okay, when we're talking about the five aggregates, because I think maybe some people got lost here, we're talking about the five psychophysical aggregates, and the composite of this is what we call the person. So one is the form aggregate, that's referring to our body. And then the other four are mental aggregates. They're all types of consciousness. One is referring to the mental factor of feeling. Then we have the mental factor of discrimination. Then the fourth aggregate is called compounded phenomena or compositional factors is a better title, compositional factors. And that includes whole bunches of all other kinds of mental factors. And then the primary consciousness aggregate, which is referring to the primary consciousnesses of the visual, auditory, you know, the five senses and the mental. Okay? So these four together make up the mind, and this one makes up the body. Yeah? Now when we have a throwing karma ripening, you know, when our throwing karma is ripening to be a human being, you don't just get the body of a human being, you also get the consciousness of a human being. Your consciousness becomes the consciousness. It's not like you get the consciousness of a human being, but your consciousness becomes the consciousness of a human being. Okay? Now, the body that you get at that point, your body itself is just atoms and molecules, so it's not positive or negative, it's not pleasure or pain. The body itself. You know, but through the body you experience a lot of pleasure and pain. So that is how karma is related to it. Okay? Was kind
karma
of they say karma generally, in general, this does not mean absolutely all the time. In general, karma is referring to, you know, the results of karma have to do with the pleasure, things that are involved with the pleasure and pain of sentient beings. It doesn't mean that the results of karma are the pleasure and pain of sentient beings. It means things that are involved with that, like our body is involved with it. Okay? But again, I mean, you come to this thing where it's really hard to isolate what's karma and what's physical conditioning. You know, what's the physics, the law of physics, and what's the law of biology, and what's the law of, you know, it's like, because all these things really influence each other a lot. But when we're talking about karma, we're looking at the plate of noodles from the aspect of what causes, what factors are involved with the pain and pleasure of beings. Yeah?
You know, I mean, all Western psychology is based on this idea that you unconsciously carry pain around with you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're having this unconscious experience of pain, and you your things in your life, and you're like, probably not aware that this is going on.
Uh-huh.
How does karma feel like that?
Okay. Now, this is an interesting thing, because when they talk about the unconscious, you know, from a Buddhist, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, what do we really mean by unconscious? Because we have this idea like, you know, you had some kind of traumatic event, and so you've been experiencing this pain ever since, and that's influencing your life. Okay? And we have this idea as if we're all the time, 24 hours a day, experiencing this pain, but we're unaware of it. Yeah, we have that idea. But if you start to look at your experience, are you all the time, 24 hours a day, experiencing that pain from some incident that happened 5 years ago? if you're experiencing it, it could be actually a conscious thing, but you're not aware of your experience, like you're not aware of what you're thinking of when you're driving in the car, but you're thinking and feeling a lot of things that actually are your experience. They are conscious phenomena, but because you're so distracted by external things, you're not aware of what your own conscious phenomena are, so therefore you call it unconscious. Okay, so there's that kind of thing. But if we look, you know, you have some traumatic thing happening, it's not like you're in pain every single moment of the day because of it. It's not there. It's like when you think about that, maybe that pain comes up. Or maybe that pain is there, but you're not aware of it. You know, actually some thought processes is going on, and it's causing you to remember something or causing you to look at the world in a certain way that's causing you to be painful at that particular moment, but you're not aware that you're thinking that. But you're definitely thinking that, and it's your conscious experience. Okay? So this idea of, and it's just real interesting, you start to look at your own experience, that this idea of, like we say, I have a hang-up, or I have a problem, and it's like this incredible, you know, like this boulder, you know, it's like, it's on our back and it's there 24 hours a day, you know. But whatever problem you have, is it there 24 hours a day? Are you experiencing? Well, I don't know. I mean, when you're eating frozen yogurt and you're enjoying that, are you at the same time when you're experiencing the pleasure of eating frozen yogurt? You know, are you necessarily caught up in, you know, 5 years ago somebody did this and that and the other thing to me? What I'm getting at is that if you look at our experience, it's like this play of different mental factors, different experiences, different attitudes. It's like so many different mental factors, attitudes, feelings, emotions, everything. It comes and it goes, and it comes and it goes, and it comes and it goes. And so the idea of any particular experience of pain or pleasure, or any particular attitude as being this concrete, fixed thing that's always there, if we begin to look at our experience, we'll see that that's completely not the way it is. You know, that your experience just... I mean, look what happens when you watch your breath. Look at how many different things go through your mind when you're trying to, all the different experiences going through your mind when you're watching your breath. You know, can you say that there's this one solid, my problem, my trauma that's there all the time? It's not there all the time. You know, at certain particular times it may surface and influence how you see things, but it doesn't mean that 24 hours a day it does.
What this is making me think of is when we talk about results of karma and the instinctive behavior patterns result,
mm-hmm.
and particularly talking about unconscious, that time related to karma, that result of karma, the thing that somehow drives us to have these instinctive behavior patterns, and it's like maybe that's at least part of unconscious.
Yeah,
and that is a result of karma.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's unconscious in the sense that maybe we're not fully aware of what our experience is, but it is a conscious experience. In other words, you may be angry and not know you're angry, but your anger is a conscious experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And you're repeatedly getting angry may have some influence by your past karma.
Right, the tendency to get angry could
mm-hmm.
be a ripening of karma, one form of ripening of karma.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is to make a distinction between conscious and unconscious, in a sense, doesn't really make much sense or much difference there. It's a drive.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it's coming from what Freud might have called unconscious and some isn't, but it's really one thing.
Yeah, because I think as we develop more mindfulness, we'll see that it's one thing. Because we'll begin to become aware of all the different things that are going on all the time.
Yeah.
Shall we sit quietly?